Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? Welcome to the Around the World podcast. I'm your host, Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more in the Around the World podcast.
Hello, everyone. I'm sitting here in a little village called Shaxi in Yunnan province in southern China, and I'm finding that it's absolutely impossible to get a really quiet space and escape the background noise. Everywhere I go in China, this is the case, and here is no exception. It's definitely the biggest challenge for this podcast, but I've kind of just accepted that from here on out, as long as I'm recording in China, there's always going to be something happening in the background. Right now, there's people shouting, and they're building a guest house right next to this closed coffee shop that I'm sitting in. Anyway, my guest for today is Liam Delmain. Liam has spent a good portion of his life in China. He's originally from Wisconsin and also Minnesota. He was a lot of fun to talk to. So let's get right to it and give it up for Liam Delmain. I just asked my friend, come to some little village and relax and work on writing my book and, you know, that kind of stuff. And he's like, "Oh, I got the village for you." And it's called Shaxi. And so here we are in Shaxi. And this place is beautiful. It's like blue skies every day. It's a little town and really has an old characteristic about it. Although I'm noticing a lot of construction.
Yeah, I feel like that's something that's going on more in these past few years. I came to Shaxi a long time ago, but I maybe came to Shaxi the first time when I was like, oh, I don't even know. My dad, so I used to come to China a lot in the summers because my dad would lead high school abroad trips.
And so where's your dad, or where do you live normally? Where do you call home?
In Minnesota.
Yeah.
I was born on the South Shore in Bayfield, Wisconsin, but grew up half in the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
So right now he teaches in the suburb of the Twin Cities, Minnetonka. He teaches Chinese.
Oh, yeah.
So he's done abroad trips through a number of different ways, through the high school, through different organizations. But he's always sort of kept the same style of like running them and like the places that we go. So every summer the whole family tagged along, and us as kids would just kind of run around, and my mom would help out, and we'd do our own thing half the time and go with the students half the time, and it sort of gave a familial atmosphere to the whole thing. I thought it was really nice.
That's
probably
awesome
for the students as well as us.
What were the students like? Are you talking college students?
High school.
Oh, yeah. High school.
So I think most of the time they were probably juniors and seniors,
yeah,
older high schoolers.
So they were more like supervised, or there were chaperones and stuff?
Right. So my dad was the leader, and there was maybe ever... It was my dad and my mom. My mom was mostly there to watch us, but she would also help out. And aside from my parents, there was maybe one other person that was maybe a close friend of my dad's who lived in China who would come around with us, or maybe another teacher that he knew that taught Chinese, and they would bring some students.
Huh.
So chaperone trip, few adults, bunch of kids.
Huh.
Sort of dwindled over the years. The groups used to be pretty big, maybe 15 kids.
Yeah.
But the last one I was on a few years back was like 5. So.
Wow, why did it go down? Like, China's becoming so much more popular, like, in the news all the time.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I think, well, part of it was the channels that he was doing these trips through. So when he first started, you know, I don't actually know all the details about, because he's been going to China for a long time, but when we first started going on the trips, he was taking students through Concordia Language Villages.
Mm.
And Concordia Language Villages is an organization that runs language immersion programs year-round in Minnesota, and they have summer immersion camps, which are super cool. And that's been a huge part of my language experience growing up, why I know Chinese, French, all this sort of like international experience. And so they used to run abroad programs as well. They actually, I think like 2007 or 8 or something, they had to cut all their abroad programs. But before that point, he was running them through Concordia. So yeah. There was a fair amount of kids that would, they would go to the summer camp, they would maybe go to summer camp for years, and then by the time they were junior, senior in high school, it was like, all right, you know, you've been to camp for years, you're doing the same sort of thing. They kind of want another step, so they had these abroad programs. So you, instead of going to camp in Minnesota, you could spend the same sort of time, 3.5 weeks, 4 weeks, in the country. So in that way, there was a lot of sort of, there was like a consistent flow of kids moving up and like coming on these trips. So I think there were a lot more groups.
Yeah. Is the main goal of Concordia to learn the language, or are there other goals?
Definitely other goals, yeah. Oh. So main goals.
I don't know Concordia at all, not familiar.
Okay, yeah, well, it's a really, to me, it's an incredible organization. It's been a huge part of my life, but the main goals of Concordia are, one, of course, language learning and teaching language, as well as sort of cultural understanding and like coming to know people and a place and a different culture and language, because culture and language are so, they're really connected.
Yeah, they're so intertwined. Yeah
absolutely. But another big part of it is becoming a global citizen, raising global citizens. So there's maybe, I think now there's 15 different languages that there are villages in, and they're all based in Minnesota. Most of them are around Bemidji. But there's some like sort
Bemidji,
of satellite sites.
I seem to remember that.
Yeah.
Is that like a hockey town?
It must be. It's in Minnesota.
I used to live in Rochester for a little while.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just remember a few of these little town names, and they're
Bemidji's
famous for...
pretty. Well, it's not a little town. It's fairly large.
Maybe I'm thinking of somewhere else. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's fine. I don't follow hockey. I don't know, but it's a nice place. You know, lakes, sort of Minnesota vibes. It's good.
Yeah.
So they got there's a main site in Bemidji where there's a bunch of villages all next to each other. And so there's a fair amount of interaction between the villages during the summer too. The programs are sort of run in two halves in the summer, and during each half there's what they call International Day. So all the villages get together and they have this like big festival and party where they'll like perform things in their different languages from their different camps, their different cultures. And it's just this big celebration of language and culture and like global like friendships and connections.
That's awesome.
It's
so
really
you've got, so you've made like a lot of friends from around the world through this too.
Oh yeah, I think Concordia Language Villages has probably been like the number one reason why I have so many international connections and just experience globally. Because when I was young, it was my parents worked in Concordia for years, and. We traveled a lot as a family throughout my life, and pretty much all our travels, besides the taking students to China, was visiting their friends that they had met through Concordia.
Oh,
so,
okay. Yeah.
Like, we went to France a few times, and those were all people that they worked at French camp in the summers, and there were all kinds of people we saw in China that worked at Chinese camp in the summers. Because the staff is generally, at any given village, the staff usually consists of, maybe the ratios are different, but it's generally a fair, half and half Americans and people from the actual countries that speak the language, so
okay.
Native speakers,
yeah.
Which is really, really cool. I've just now hit the point where last summer was my first summer working at the camps.
Oh, really?
And it was a total, like, it was really cool because it's something I've been sort of moving towards my whole life.
So you've transitioned.
Yeah.
How old are you, if you don't mind?
Yeah, I'm 19, just turned 19.
19, God.
Two or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, you look really young, but you got this kind of like vibe about you that's much older. Like you seem like a much more mature person than most 19-year-olds.
Oh, thank you. I think people tell me that a fair amount. It's probably
Well, it's great. Do you think Concordia has helped with this, or your lifestyle of international stuff?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was cool becoming a staff member for the first time. I really got the first hand of experience of getting to know people that you work with and coming out of it with these connections like all over the world, which is really, really cool. You know, I definitely made friends as a camper as well all over. But once you start working at the camps, you really meet the people that come from all over.
Yeah,
and it's really. It's a pretty sweet thing.
Oh,
I've already
great.
I've been in China for 4 months now, and on my trip I've already seen a bunch of people that I worked at Chinese camp with in Taiwan, in Beijing, and I'm hoping to see some in Shanghai as well once I go out there. So yeah, it's really, really cool.
Cool. Do you do couch surfing too, or Have you tried it?
I've never couch surfed on my own, but yeah. Once when my family went to France, I believe it was in France, we couch surfed. And yeah. It was really cool.
With your parents?
Yeah. Yeah, my whole family. Awesome. So it was me, my little brother, my older sister, and my parents.
Oh.
Five of us. We had a really cool experience couch surfing. I remember two places we went, two families that we stayed with. And the first one, I remember like pulling in. I was pretty young, so the memories are sort of, you know,
yeah,
just like pictures. But I remember pulling in, and it's just like this super interesting, like, sort of characteristic house. And it's got these like motorcycles everywhere and like art everywhere and like this little bar and...
A bar in their house.
Yeah, I think that's what I remember. It's pretty neat. They had some dogs. I don't know. They were really nice.
Was it in a city or outside?
It was in a city. It wasn't in like a downtown area, but it was definitely in an urban area.
Okay.
But I don't remember much of that one. But the second one we stayed at was pretty cool. It was more of a rural home. And it was this family. I think they had maybe two kids. And it was really cool because the father worked at these famous salt flats. He was like a salt man. I don't know what you call a person who works with salt, but
I don't know.
He worked on these salt flats, and
in France.
In France, right? I forget. I really wish I could remember the name of the place, but it's like a famous salt. It's like the salt's supposed to be really good.
Oh wow! I didn't know there was a big difference in salt quality.
Oh, of course, it's very high.
It's just salt.
It's like Himalayan salt and like. Spanish, yeah.
No. I thought it was all NaCl.
No, man. But yeah, so he was a salt man. And I remember, it was funny because I remember when we first got to the house, we had rented a car, and so we were driving around kind of on our own. And we got to this place, and the family wasn't home. And I remember our parents sitting us down and giving us this sort of lecture like, okay, we're guests here. We're not going to go into the home, you know. They had this like little outer sort of cabin thing that we stayed in,
okay.
And so they were like, okay, we're going to be very respectful. We're going to do our own thing, you know. They're living their lives here.
Yeah,
we're not going to intrude. They're being very nice. We're going to stay here, and we're, you know, that's sort of the deal. And then as soon as the family like arrived at the house, they came out and they invited us in, and they had us hang out and play games with their kids, and just like. Whatever my parents said was just like, nope, they're gonna invite us in and do everything with us.
Yeah.
And so that was really cool. You know, we had dinner with them, played with their kids.
That's awesome.
And then it was probably the next day, the father of the family brought us to where he works, the salt flats.
Yeah.
And we got to like see the salt flats.
Did
and,
you
like,
play in the
walk
salt?
Around. I think you weren't actually supposed to like go into the salt areas, but you got to see them. And then there was like a big museum and that was pretty cool. So that's the only couch surfing experience I remember.
You know, Bolivia has a salt hotel that you could stay in.
Hotel? What makes it a salt hotel?
It's made out of salt.
Literally?
Yeah.
Like the building?
Yeah, the Salar de Uyuni it's called. That's the area.
Whoa.
It's a giant salt flat. You may have seen pictures online or whatever of people do a lot of trick photography there.
Okay.
Because for all the way to the horizon, all you can see is salt.
Jeez.
If you go to the middle of it, it's just salt. Everywhere. And
what does that even look like? Is it just like white?
Pure white. Just
wow.
This giant like landscape of pure white. You have to go right to the middle to where it's like to the horizon, but
okay.
You can do it. And you have like when you look at a picture that's taken there, you have zero perspective. There's not a tree or something to tell you how big something should be. So people will like take a picture of like they're 5 feet from the camera and holding a fork in their hand. And then their friends run like 100 yards away, and they're tiny. And so it looks like the guy's trying to eat them with his fork, and stab them with his fork.
That's really cool.
That's like one example. And there's all sorts of creative like trick photography pictures from there.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But salt.
Like, also there's a salt hotel.
There's a salt hotel.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
nuts.
Made out of these bricks of salt.
That makes me think of, earlier, yesterday we were talking about the ice festival in Harbin.
Yeah.
And they have like ice hotels, right? Like ice rooms. You literally like sleep on an ice bed.
Is that
but it's
right?
Like covered in like a deer skin or something.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't see that, but that, yeah, totally could be.
I feel like I've either read about it or seen pictures.
I've gone to like ice bars. That's kind of becoming a big thing.
Yeah.
Like in Minnesota, they have these along, there's like one famous one along the North Shore between, Duluth and the Canadian border, like halfway between.
Okay.
I forget what it's called, but in that area, there's a bar just that they make completely out of ice.
Just in the winter?
Oh, well, yeah, obviously only in the winter. Yeah, it melts otherwise. And you can sit on ice blocks. And they will put, like, deer skins on top of them. And you get a shot, or if you get a shot, it's in a glass made of ice. So you drink your shot, and you just chuck your glass on the ground.
That's awesome. That'd be so satisfying.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like a novelty thing. It's not I don't know. I mean, it's not like somewhere I'd go every Friday night. That's a watering hole type place. But it's fun to do if you're 21.
Yeah. Of course.
That's a cool thing. And so I could totally imagine them doing that in Harbin.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's definitely a thing. I want to go back to that ice festival. It sounds really cool. Might not appreciate it as much as I did when I was like six, but
if you're a kid, it's just like paradise.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, as an adult, it's still pretty cool. Mm. This for people who don't know, like this, like Harbin is the city in the very far north of China. It's got a few million people, and every winter they have this festival of ice, and like it starts, I think late December they start it, and it just goes until the ice melts, which isn't usually till like at least mid-February, maybe later, maybe not till March.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that they make far north.
Huge sculptures out of ice and
castles.
Yeah, last year, I think there's a theme every year, and last year the theme was like buildings and from around the world.
Oh, like modern architecture.
Yeah, yeah, so they had the Blue Mosque
from
Istanbul, and they had the Kremlin, and they had a bunch of Chinese like giant buildings too from like Beijing. And really cool. I don't think they do the same thing every year. I think it changes. And then at night, it's all lit up. So they put like the rope lights inside the ice. And so it's all glowing. And then they'll put giant floodlights on all the sculptures too. So they're all like really bright. So it's really like psychedelic actually. There's all these really bright colors. Yeah, it's awesome.
That makes me think. We have something on a much smaller scale, but similar in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. They make ice sculptures every year when it gets cold enough, if it gets cold enough.
Huh.
And usually it's
if it gets cold enough?
Well, you know, it varies.
Oh, man, that's kind of sad if the Twin Cities don't even get cold enough.
Usually it is, but, you know, winters these past few years have been a little flux.
Well, I remember, like, one year in Madison, the lakes almost didn't freeze over in Madison, Wisconsin. And they always freeze over. It's never not happened.
Yeah.
And it came, like, we almost didn't even have a winter. This is, like, 6 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
And so they barely froze for like a week and then thawed. And everyone's like, oh, that's so sad. But then the next year we just got like bombarded. It was just like freezing for like 4 months straight.
It's really crazy how that goes.
Yeah.
That's like, I feel like last winter in Minnesota was super mild. And then this winter it was late. I mean, I'm not even there, but I heard from like my parents and friends. Hmm. It was super late, but like maybe the end of November or something, they just got dumped in snow. Totally dumped.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, is it an El Nino year this year? I can't remember.
Who even knows? I feel like El Nino is just something people say without knowing what it is.
To be completely honest. I think it is a real thing.
It must be a real thing, but I think for the past three or four winters, I've heard people say, oh, it's just El Nino.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, what?
It can't be every year. It's like every few years it comes. You're maybe too young, but do you remember Chris Farley on Saturday Night Live?
No idea, no.
Really? That's crazy. It's weird. It's weird meeting people who are like that much younger than me, and this is like Chris Farley is such a iconic figure for like
to me it's
my
just
age.
Like who's that?
Yeah, he was a Saturday Night Live guy, like a big fat guy, and he died of I don't know, probably from drugs at a young age. But one of his awesome sketches was he came out as a wrestler, and he said dressed like a professional wrestler, and he said, "I am El Nino," and that was his character, was El Nino. And he's talking about how he's, you know, he's gonna force this horrible winter upon everybody.
Oh my gosh!
Yes, I just remember it being hilarious.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, this is probably like mid-90s that came out.
SNL, I love SNL, but I haven't watched a whole lot of the old ones.
Yeah,
I should go back. I feel like I've heard that it's sort of had its glory days.
I haven't watched it lately. I mean, there was like the generation before me were the like really classic actors, like
who's that guy, really silly hilarious actor comedian,
Steve Martin was
Steve Martin. Nope, that's what I'm thinking of.
So that generation, you know, Chevy Chase and those guys, And then there was, like, when I was in high school, there was, like, Chris Farley and Adam Sandler and, you know.
Right.
Chris
Adam Rock. Sandler was on SNL?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Now Andy Samberg. I don't know. Is Andy Samberg still on SNL? Do you know Lonely Island?
No.
See, that's hilarious, because that's something that, like, if I asked anybody my age, they'd be like, oh, yeah, Lonely Island. It's like, yeah. Should I watch middle school?
Really? What is it?
Oh, God. They're a band. They're a musical group. But the music they make is just, like, comedy, like parody, farce,
totally really?
Stuff. Yeah, oh. Yeah. And usually it's just like really sophomoric humor, like it's just ridiculous. Mm. Like looking back on it, it's like, oh wow, that stuff was,
that was
so funny was back in the day, but now it's like, oh wow, this is just really dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's funny. It's pretty funny. And the, I guess you could say he's the lead of the group, Andy Samberg, this guy, he's a comedian.
Yeah.
And he was on SNL at some point. And he may still be, but he's really funny. I think he's really funny. Hmm. Yeah, Lonely Island. I'd say look him up, but it's probably not worth your time.
Yeah, maybe not. I've had that kind of, like, I'm getting to that age now where I have this sometimes where people talk about some reference and, like, I have no idea what the hell it even is. And I guess that used to happen sometimes just because, like, I like to travel a lot. I don't necessarily keep up with pop culture. Mm-hmm. But now I think it's because, like, because I'm just, like, too old for this
getting old.
Yeah.
I actually feel that, though. I am not, I think, between, like, growing up in a really small town, Bayfield's my hometown, South Shore, Wisconsin, on Lake Superior, and it's got a population of, like, between 400 and 500 people now. So super, super tiny.
That's really tiny.
Yeah, it's really
tiny. That's
like
Shashi size.
It is kind of Shashi size, actually, yeah. But between that and, like, living in China and, like, traveling a bunch, I've also just, I miss a lot of references
because
American pop culture isn't something I'm super
It's tough when you travel. That's a big topic.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
You win some, you lose some.
Yeah, totally.
Win a lot, lose a little. That's how I see it.
I was just thinking the other day, though, this is really weird. Like, I mean, we don't know each other very well, but, like, I took off for, 2.5 years and traveled around South America.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time in my life, I can remember, like, almost every day. Like, maybe not day to day, but week to week anyway. If you ask me, like, where was I on this time at this time, I can totally tell you where. And little pop culture references from that time, I can tell you way easier than I can say now, because I'm just kind of living in China now. I'm not really traveling. I'm not necessarily experiencing crazy new things every day.
It's for sure.
Sometimes. So I remember, I was just thinking about this the other day, like, if someone asked me, well, hey, do you remember when Gerald Ford died? I could pinpoint exactly when that was. And it's because I was in this, like, little village in Suriname.
Huh.
And it was Christmas time, and I was with a friend, and we were contemplating building a raft out of bamboo and floating down this river.
Cool.
And we're thinking about doing this, and then this guy came up to me, and he said, hey, Saddam Hussein. And he made, like, a throat-slashing motion. And I was like, what? And I realized he meant he was executed. And, like, I didn't even know he was going to be executed. Yeah. And I kind of looked it up. And I was, like, next time I got to somewhere where they had internet access, because we were way out there in the middle of nowhere, I was like, oh, was Saddam Hussein really executed? And then that day in the news, it was talking about Gerald Ford dying. and so like this weird convoluted way of remembering.
That's so interesting.
But it must have been right around Christmas of 2006. And that was like 10 years ago.
It.
Yeah, and I can just totally remember that. But now if you ask me, like, what happened 3 years ago, I don't know. Like in October, I couldn't tell you.
That's so super real, though. I think memory is such a...
It's weird.
Such an interesting thing.
So I think if you, like, really want to preserve your memory, like, travel's a great way to do it. And, like, just, like, and I mean, writing things down obviously helps, like, keeping a journal.
Yeah.
But traveling, you're always experiencing, like, new things all
the time. That's what's it. It's travel is sort of a manifestation of this, like, always ever-changing lifestyle. Like, I think that's what really makes you remember a lot of things is when you're traveling, you're always... depending on the way you're traveling, you're, like, always going someplace new. You're always meeting someone new. So your mind is always, like, super attentive and, like, super open to all these things.
Really active.
And if you're just at home, like, living, working, doing the same thing every day, it just, like, blurs, you know?
Yeah, it blends together. Like, you're... I I don't have like a scientific explanation for it, but I think your brain kind of like decides that all this info of like, well, I ate breakfast today and then I went to work and then I, you know, came home and went to bed. I think your brain realizes that's not super important to remember like 25 copies of that. And it just kind of compresses it all into one like big blur of a month.
Yeah, honestly.
And I mean, I don't know if it really works like that, but in my head, that's kind of how it works. Yeah. Yeah, that's how it feels. But yeah, I remember just like before I did this big trip around South America, I just kind of thought like my whole life was flying by, like years would go by and I wouldn't remember very much.
Yikes.
But I always remember when I traveled. Like if I went somewhere for a week, I would totally remember that week. So I thought, well, why don't I just make this my whole life? Like to whatever extent possible.
Yeah, for sure.
Just keep doing that.
You know, I feel the same way. The way I've like my whole life has been sort of this cycle of since having both my parents as teachers, high school teachers, like has really shaped the way that like my years work, you know? So it's like we live somewhere during the year. Well, I mean, I haven't moved homes that much, but we, you know, the year is like pretty stable, you know, you go to school and whatever. And then every single summer, it's like we're off somewhere. Like we're traveling, we're not at home. And when I look back and try to remember like the years of my life, like what really juts out is the summers. I remember my summers. Yeah. I can remember the most pictures and the most memories and the most like things that I really know are the summers of my life. And when I try to remember like whole school years, it's just like, oh, that's like, I get like a few flashes of maybe like a few things that happened that year, but it's just like that year, you know? But then a summer is like, so much happens in a summer that I can remember.
It's funny because like I remember like when I was your age, the way I compartmentalized all of my memories was through school years. And then like once you get out of school, you can't do that anymore. So like, it becomes more like of a calendar year thing.
Yeah.
Or an era thing, like the like when you move to a new place. Uh-huh. Huh. It's interesting though.
It is. But I've always, growing up, I've always had trouble like really like figuring out the whole calendar year thing because my life has always been year, summer. It's always been like next year means next fall.
Right, right. Which probably that's totally normal for like anybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that'll change once you finish school. Yeah. Just so you know. That's something to look forward to. But so did you always go to school in Minnesota or did you ever like do a school year abroad?
I never did a school year abroad, but my schooling has definitely jumped around a fair bit. So we'll just do a little history of my life here. So I was born in Bayfield.
Okay.
And I went to Bayfield Public School until I was 9. Actually, I take that back. Oh, man, now I got to, like, really think about this timeline here. So
it's tough.
Went to Bayfield Public School through 2nd grade.
Yeah.
Excluding the 2 years in China. The first year I lived in China, I was too young to go to school. And the second year I lived in China, I went to Yoryuan, which is Chinese kindergarten.
Yeah.
Which I remember some of.
Oh, so is that where you learn Chinese then? Because your Chinese seems like really, like, really fluent.
So I've been speaking it since I was like 3.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And you just never lost it? You kind of...
There's definitely been years where, like, over the school year, I don't have a whole lot of opportunity to use it. So it definitely kind of lapses a little bit. But every summer, my summers have always been Chinese. Hmm. Whether it's going to China, Chinese camp... It was usually both. My summers were usually one half of the summer spent abroad with the group and my parents and my family, and then the other half of the summer spent in Minnesota at Chinese immersion camp. Okay. So it was Chinese either way.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so it's been pretty consistent. Honestly, I think the part of my life where my Chinese was the most lacking was probably like the last few years before coming to China right now.
Oh, really?
Because the last, before coming to China, right, well, in September, I came here in September and now it's January. Before coming in September, it had been 2 or 3 years, I think, before I came back. Because there was one summer where I just kind of started doing my own thing and I had some other opportunities and skipped out on the China trip. Well, last summer, actually, my dad didn't do a China trip. But
okay.
But yeah, so that was the part of my life where it's sort of really kind of when I really struggled. I remember sometimes we would, like, we see our Chinese friends fairly often in the Twin Cities, like, you know, Chinese New Year, people get together, someone has a birthday, you know, whatever. There's a fair amount of them around. And so I remember going to these events where all our Chinese friends would be together, and I'd really struggle to talk to people.
Yeah.
And it felt, I didn't like that feeling.
Yeah, that's not a good feeling.
And that was a big part of why I chose to come to China for so long.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Because the Chinese is like, it's just a really big part of who I am. It's been a part of me since I was like so very young. Yeah. I really feel like partly a Chinese person.
Like, really?
I really do, yeah.
Like culturally? Like
you, absolutely, yeah.
You fit right in?
I do feel that way. And it's also a product of my dad being so into Chinese culture and being a Chinese teacher that even at home in the U.S., we, like, it's funny because I really haven't noted a lot of it until coming to China on my own and traveling. Okay. But, like, even at home, we embody a lot of, like, Chinese culture. Like, the way we eat.
Sit around and use chopsticks?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And all dig from the same bowl?
Yeah, all the same, what we would call family style in the U.S., which is just... Yeah. You know, normal here. Uh-huh. But yeah, so it's really interesting, you know. But yeah, I totally feel like a part of me is Chinese.
Cool. I mean, I think they do some things like so well here that mm-hmm. I really admire it and almost envy it even. Like,
yeah.
Like the community here aspect, yeah. That aspect of it is so cool. I mean, you just walk out anywhere in any Chinese city, you go to a park and there's all these people like hanging out mm-hmm. and catching up with their neighbors and talking. And yeah, meals are always like these grand affairs with mm-hmm. lots of people, and there's none of there. It's all, everything's shared. It's
yeah.
just all of it. That's, it's just like, it's yeah. a cool thing.
It's really cool. I remember, yeah, this, I think this was probably a product of a number of things, but I remember, so back to this timeline of my school.
Oh yeah,
so
we got
this fits right in. It's okay. Yeah. So I lived in Bayfield till I was 9. Through second grade, I went to Bayfield Public School. And then third grade, I actually changed schools and went to a small Catholic school for 1 year in the neighboring town of Washburn. And then that next year, we moved to Minnesota. So once we moved to Minnesota, I started going to public school there in the suburb that we lived, Minnetonka Public Schools. And I remember when I first got to Minnetonka Public Schools, or at that point, I was in fourth grade when we moved. So it was Scenic Heights Elementary School. And the first thing that was crazy was how big everything was. Like, I remember coming to the house that we started renting when we first moved, and just being, and it was like in, you know, this suburban area where like all the houses were really big. I thought they were really big. And
yeah.
I remember just like me and my siblings just like running around the house being like, this place is huge, what? But, and then going to school and it was like, wow, I'm in a homeroom class of like 30 kids.
Yeah.
And there's 4 of those in my grade. And it was like mind blowing because in Bayfield, it was like my entire grade class consisted of like 30 kids.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was totally a different place. And one of the things I remember most was I got there and I just started like getting to know everybody, just like making friends with everybody. Because that's one, it was normal for me living in China. And also, I think in a small town, that's kind of, you know everybody. So that's kind of how it works. And I really stuck out that way because it seems to me that looking back when I got there, it's like everyone sort of had their friends and like you hung out with your friends, but you didn't necessarily know everyone. You know, the people you didn't know, you really didn't bother that much.
Yeah.
And so I really just didn't have this conception. And so I just like went crazy and I guess I made a name for myself in the beginning. But I think I've changed over the years. But
you're the social one then.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Social butterfly. It's a cool thing to look back on.
But like in China, you just be average.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's crazy here. Like I'm always amazed when I'm on a train or a bus or something, and people just start talking, mm-hmm. like really long conversations, and I don't understand most of it because it's all in Chinese. But when I first like would see one of these, I'd assume that these people must be like best friends. But then it often becomes really apparent they just met
yeah,
yeah.
And it's really cool.
It's just so like normal here to just start talking to anyone.
I think that I took this intercultural communication class my senior year of high school at a community college, which goes back into the school thing, but I'll get back to that. And it was interesting because it talked a lot about like different sort of putting a name to like different values in each culture that like are different. So like a sort of I guess this imagined space between people, like this social space, you know?
Yeah.
Like in the U.S., I think in more of the Western world, but especially in the U.S., I feel, it's like there's a lot of this sort of space between you and other individuals, especially strangers, that feels like sort of impassable. Like you're not supposed to really breach that space.
That's true, yeah.
And here in China, it's like there is no space. There's like you're all just here. And it's interesting because it manifests both like socially and physically. Like people in China, you know, it sounds weird. I think it would sound weird to some people to say it like this, but you touch each other a lot. You know, there's like feeling is like a really big thing. You know, you're talking to someone and you may not even know them well, but like you're saying something that like you really want them to feel. So like you put your hand on their knee or something, you know, and that's totally, totally normal. But in the US, you might think like, well, it's creepy as hell. Like, get your hand off me, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's totally another thing. But I kind of love that. I think it's cool because there's like a level of intimacy just between people. You know, you don't even have to know someone to like have that connection, which I think is really lovely.
Well, if you're Chinese,
well, right.
It's much harder for me being a foreigner to make it like those deeper connections.
Sure.
But I see it all the time in the local people. But I'm thinking like back home, like you almost need permission.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I had like 20 people come into a room who don't know each other and just sit down and I'm going to like start talking to them, like none of them would talk to each other beforehand.
Yeah.
And then if I said, okay, everybody like turn to your right and get to know your neighbor on your right.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden they'd do it.
Then they'll get into it. Yeah.
Yeah. They'd get into it. At least with like small talk and stuff. But
yeah,
it's almost like you need a good reason to do it. And you just can't really come up to someone and talk to them.
Yeah.
Unless maybe if you're like out in a bar or something, that's kind of the one exception.
Sure. There's definitely spaces.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have a hard time. Of course, these are generalizations, but I think it definitely holds true. Hmm. But there are definitely places I feel that more people in the U.S. are a little more communal and like. Oh, yeah. It depends on your personality, of course. But.
Oh, totally.
There's a wide range of
behaviors, but like. You know, it's very evident coming here.
Oh, for sure.
But now the downside of that is, I don't know if you can hear, if you're listening to this, there's like horses going by us right now, and there's bells ringing. So in this little village, these guys who I guess they must be the locals, they're dressed like cowboys almost.
Yeah.
And they stand around with horses, and they all have a bunch of bells attached to them. And you can pay him some money, and he'll jump on the back of the horse, and he'll walk you around the village. So I guess you get to feel like a cowboy. Maybe that's the point. So a lot of like Chinese tourists especially will come here and do that. And so I wanted to find the absolute quietest place in the entire village to do this podcast. And I thought, okay, we're in a cafe that is closed.
It literally hasn't been opened. It's still being made.
Yeah, it's still being made. And we're just sitting on the top floor here, kind of like watching the sun go down behind the mountains, and it's a really beautiful setting.
Nice, yeah.
Awesome setting. But next door, there's like construction work, and there's guys pounding and sawing, and then there's these horses that come by. And so even in the quietest place in a quiet little village, you're still going to hear a lot of sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at home, it'd be just so much easier to just go somewhere and have no sound
privacy,
at all.
Privacy, yeah.
Yeah, the privacy things.
Yeah.
And as a Westerner, that can drive you a little crazy if you let it.
Yeah, for sure. I think that definitely is another big part of where the whole space thing manifests is in sound. Like something, like you go onto a train or a bus in China, and like these days, you know, everybody has a smartphone.
Yep.
And you'll be on like a long train ride or a bus ride or something, and it's totally normal for people to just like watch a movie or listen to music or watch a TV show with just like, no headphones, you know, just the sound playing.
Yeah, it totally
and
is.
Nobody cares. It's because it's totally normal here.
Yeah.
And there will be like, you know, three movies going on at one time around you, and nobody will say, please put on your headphones, or like, please.
Never.
Like, I'm trying to watch my movie, you know.
Never.
Nobody ever does that. No. But again, if you're in the U.S., it's like you're totally inconveniencing everybody around you if you're not using headphones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think that's super interesting. I think a really funny way, actually, that manifests as well is you go, I think... I saw this like last week in, we were in, let's see, a week ago, somewhere around a week ago, I was in Chengdu, which is the capital city of Sichuan, like south central China. And my friend and I were walking around one of the city parks. And of course, you know, it was the evening, so there were all these people dancing, because in almost all city parks in China, somewhere around 7 p.m., all the, like, I think it's mostly old-ish.
Yeah.
Like, mostly older folks.
Yeah, middle-aged and older.
Yeah, middle-aged and older come out to the parks, bring a speaker, an amplifier, something, put on some music, and they just start dancing, whether it's line dancing or sort of ballroom or...
Yeah, I've seen both. I've seen ballroom dancing.
Yeah, it really varies.
Typically line dancing, though.
Typically line dancing, yeah.
And it's nothing, like, super complicated either.
Oh,
Just like, it's kind of just like a way to get outside.
And, again, yeah, get exercise, be with your friends, have a good time. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking through this park, and there was this, like, big square or circle or something. And there were, like, three or four different groups of people dancing, all with, like, big speakers blasting their own music. Like 10 feet away from another group blasting the music that they're dancing to.
Yeah.
And I just thought, like, oh, that's so funny, because I think in the West, it would be like, can you please distance yourself from me, because I'm trying to dance to my music, so go dance to your music somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, and I've kind of, like, gotten to the point where I can walk through a park and always hear music, and I'm okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the music will change. But in that case, where there are two speakers playing different songs...
Or three or four.
Or sometimes more... and they're hitting my ears simultaneously, it drives me insane.
Yeah.
I can't take it. And I'm like, God, will at least just one of you turn that off. Like, you can have one of these going, fine, but come on.
It's pretty funny.
But, yeah, that's just this giant cultural difference. Which, sometimes it's like, it almost seems like the opposite of how I would think of Chinese culture, because... I would think of it as, like, the group is more important than the individual. You know, that's what I hear a lot. I don't quite know how to reconcile this, because in that case, like, you're on a bus or you're in a park, shouldn't you always be thinking of the group and not disturbing the group? Like, with music or with talking loudly or whatever? But maybe they just don't see it as disturbing the group.
Well, I think the way that you see it is the group consists of individuals. And the group being happy or well off means each individual being happy or well off. So if you're in a whole bus and each person has the liberty to listen to their own music out loud, then that's the group being well off.
So it's total freedom then.
Yeah, something like that.
Huh. Yeah, it's like a level deeper than I realized.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It is interesting. I mean, That's an interesting... I've never really thought about it that way, actually, until I just said it just now. So that's an interesting thing.
Yeah. Well, there's just a lot of things, like, me being pretty new to China, I still see. You know, it's almost like at my last job, like, for an analogy, if I was a software engineer. So if I was working on some code that I had to get done and it wasn't working, I might just hit my head over it for, like hours, like, what is wrong with this thing? And if I just asked my coworker to come over and just take a quick look, he'd oftentimes just go, oh yeah, there it is, that's your problem. And likewise with him, it's not that he was that much smarter than me necessarily. It's just that I was way too entrenched in this stuff.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see the forest for the trees, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he could just come in and boom, just see it. And so I guess if you like are Chinese and you grow up in China, it's just normal to you. Yeah. Everything's just normal. And if you're kind of like what you are, where you've been immersed in this culture for your whole life, but on and off, you probably notice a lot of these differences. But for someone who is brand new to it, it's just like shocking. It's just like everything just hits you at once.
I would say I can imagine, but here I really can't.
Yeah, we've probably experienced it other places you've gone.
Yeah, totally.
Like other cultures that are different than Chinese and also different than American.
Totally.
Yeah. So where else have you traveled?
I have, so like I said, I've been through Europe a little, exclusively just with my family. We've road tripped around France twice. Went to Ireland once. One of the trips we stopped off in Spain for like a night or a few hours. Yeah, China. I've never been anywhere else in Asia besides China. just through China a lot, except for the 24 hours I had to go to South Korea to renew my visa stay, which was a pain because I would like to see South Korea, but I didn't see South Korea because I just had to leave and enter the country again.
Well, do you have to do that again?
No, I'm actually planning to go home on the last day that I can. This time, yeah. So,
Well, I mean, you're young. You've got your whole life to see the world.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. But I've the one other place. Well, I guess Canada counts. Being in Minnesota, my sort of thing is Canada is just there. But
yeah,
yeah. I've been to Canada a little, and Jordan. I went to Jordan.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
What was that for?
Just a visit. I had a really good friend who lived there for a while, maybe 9 months or something, working for an NGO. And it was my sophomore year of high school, and I had just gotten home from a semester of going to a boarding school in Wisconsin.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of Conserve School?
No.
Okay. I thought you lived in Madison, maybe, but it's a relatively new thing.
It's in Madison?
No, a lot of people in Madison go, but it's actually in Land O'Lakes. It's up by the UP, on the border of the UP.
Yeah, my wife goes up, or her family goes up there to Phelps every year, which is really close to Land O'Lakes.
Yeah, it's a
just on the other side of the border.
Beautiful country.
Yeah, it's so beautiful up there.
But yeah, so I'd just gotten back from the semester school, and my friend, who was working in Jordan at the time, just like invited me to come stay with her for a little while.
Okay.
Yeah, it was super amazing of her. She bought me a plane ticket and flew me out there.
Well, that's nice of her.
Yeah, she's the best. She's the best. And
all right, shout
that out. Was the first time that I ever flew on my own.
Yeah?
So that was pretty cool. Went to Jordan, and I stayed for 10 days. And it was really amazing. It was, it was also interesting because it was really the first time I had gone abroad without knowing anything about the place I'm going to.
Yeah, okay.
Because before I'd traveled to France and I traveled to China, both places which I'm pretty familiar with, having grown up around the language and the culture.
Okay.
So going to Jordan was cool because I really didn't know anything about Jordan. Mm. Didn't know anything about Arabic. Didn't know anything about the Middle East.
Yeah.
So it was really awesome, and it was the first time I'd really been able to just be like, cool, I can just be totally like in awe all the time about this place.
That's it. You get that culture shock right away.
And it was lovely. I really loved Jordan. I really want to go back there because it was a really cool trip.
Did you go to Wadi Rum?
I did go to Wadi Rum,
How was it? That looks really awesome.
Oh my gosh, it was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely one of the most amazing times of my life. Yeah, so let's see. So my friend lived in Amman, which is the capital, and worked there. And so I think I flew in on a weekend. And so the first weekend, I was there for 10 days. So it was sort of like a one weekend, 1 week, one weekend sort of thing.
Okay, yeah.
So the first weekend, we just kind of stuck around We stuck around Amman, and we just like drove outside of the city and like through the countryside a little, which was just like really pretty. You know, maybe part of it was just because I'd never seen a landscape like that, but it was a beautiful landscape. And we saw some like old castles, and then we went to like hot springs and just kind of did stuff outside of Amman, and that was really cool. And then during the week, we just kind of chilled because she had to work, so I hung out, and we sort of, you know, we'd walk around the city like in the evenings and stuff and have the food. Oh, the food in Jordan was awesome.
Yeah.
I loved the food there.
Yeah, I've always loved Middle Eastern food too. Like when I get it, which isn't very often.
Yeah, it was like my first ever exposure to it, and it was just delicious. And so the second weekend before I left, we went to Wadi Rum.
Okay.
And it was so cool. We went there. We sort of did a whole weekend expedition thing, like with the Petra and Wadi Rum sort of experience. So the first night we drove out there, or I think we had a driver drive us out there, and to the edge of this desert valley, which is Wadi Rum. And
that's what it means, or
I think that's what it means.
It means desert valley, huh?
I think, you know, I could be totally wrong, but that's what I'm recollecting.
I just know it's a cool name.
Yeah, it could be something I just inferred, and then in my mind was like, oh yeah, that's what that means.
Well, it is a desert valley in any.
It is
any
a desert valley, yeah. All right, so we got to Wadi Rum, and the first night, it was like already dark by the time we got there, and this dude like met us where we got dropped off, and took us in this like 4-wheel jeep thing, like. Through the desert a little to the camp that we stayed at. And we stayed in this like Bedouin camp, which is these like wall tents basically. And it was just so cool. The landscape was gorgeous. The stars were I think it's supposed to be one of the best places in the world to see the stars because the atmosphere is so thin. Or something.
Oh yeah,
because
it's a desert.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's not the moisture in the air.
Right, right. And it was, oh my gosh, it was just totally wondrous.
Must be awesome.
And the Bedouins were really nice. The first night we just like sat around this fire in this tent and talked to one of the dudes for a while. And he was like super philosophical and he like spoke French and like just had these cool conversations around this fire and had a goat's milk tea, which was delicious. I think that's something they also do in like Tibet and like Shangri-La region.
Yeah, we had that a little bit there. And I was in India earlier this, or well now 2016, last year now.
Okay.
And I went to Dharamsala, where the Dalai Lama lives.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, they served, it's more like yak milk tea.
Okay.
But yeah, it's got a really strong flavor.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a little getting used to, but I think it's actually delicious.
Oh, I loved the goat's milk tea we had in Wadi Rum was delicious. I've been, like, wanting to have it again ever since that time.
Yeah. I could totally see it. It's just, like, so rich.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's got like an almost
and they like pour half
flavor.
The tea in the cup and then they just pour milk in the rest and it's just really good. But yeah, so the desert was beautiful and then the next day we got to just like drive around a little and it's just this stunning landscape because it's a desert, like a sand desert, and then there's all these, like I would call them mountains, but that name just really isn't fitting because it's not like a uniform like sort of point of earth that's been like, you know, like kind of coned up out of the earth like a mountain is. It's just these like giant stone, like just like, I don't even know what to call them.
So like, they're not sand dunes?
No. It's like sandstone.
Okay.
And there's just these giant formations that it's almost like a pillar, but it's like really big. It's not like a pillar makes me think like sort of narrow and tall, but they're like really like large and wide.
Oh.
Like, I mean, I'm trying to think of like a good analogy for the size of these things, and they're just sort of like semi-uniformly scattered throughout the desert. So you're like driving throughout these things and it's like driving around these like, you know, mountains for a better word.
Yeah.
But they're full of these like, they're like really layered and they're full of these like cracks and ridges and lines. It's just totally, you know, Google some images. Whoever's listening to this, Wadi Rum.
I'll put a link up or something.
I'm going to, you know, now, because I've tried to describe this so many times to people, I'm going to look up the word for it because I'm sure there's a word for it.
Oh, probably. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was amazing. So we drove around and then we did get to scramble up some sand dunes. And then you get to like slide down the sand dune, which is
cool.
Super fun.
On your butt, you mean?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You like run and then you like jump and you just slide down.
Yeah.
Super fun.
Did you do any sandboarding there?
No. That sounds awesome though.
I tried it in Peru.
Oh yeah.
On sand dunes and it looks really fun if you can get the hang of it, but I couldn't. But the cool thing is, like, when you fall on sand, it doesn't hurt.
Not at all.
So.
Are you a snowboarder at all? Or
no.
Anything?
Skiing, yeah.
Yeah,
but
cool.
Not snowboarding. Cool. Yeah. More cross-country skiing, though.
Okay,
right. A little downhill.
Cool. Yeah, I do both.
Do you?
I love cross-country skiing.
And do you snowboard?
Yeah, yeah.
I do and you ski?
Yeah.
Oh, so you can do both.
I'm a double,
yeah.
Double kind of guy, yeah.
To me, it just seems so weird snowboarding because you have to look sideways always.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't, I don't know, I couldn't get the hang of the balance of it.
It's definitely different. I'm lucky because I learned them both when I was pretty young.
Yeah, it's like so cool to learn stuff like that when you're young.
Yeah.
Because you're like really close to the ground, low center of gravity.
Yeah.
And now
you sort of
get
like an intuition for it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just like so tall and lanky that stuff like that I just can't do.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
Honestly.
Yeah. Oh, well. You told me yesterday you're taking a gap year.
Yep. So.
And so what are you doing with your gap year?
Well, I'm in China. it was. Let's see. It's hard to sort of define. To get a little background, maybe I got to say a little bit about my former years of high school as well. So my last 2 years of high school, my junior and senior year, I actually spent going to Minneapolis Community and Technical College. I didn't take any courses at my high school. There's a program in Minnesota that's super dope called PSEO, and it stands for Post-Secondary Enrollment Option. And it allows high school juniors and seniors to take college courses at a bunch of local universities and colleges for free. The state pays for it.
Wow.
And you get dual credit. So you get high school credit and you get college credit.
That's great.
It's amazing. Wow. And so I started doing that at the beginning of my junior year out of a sort of... I came back from the semester school, and which was like amazing and outdoor focused and like environmental learning and all this like super engaging stuff. And then I came back to regular high school and I was just like, bleh, you know, this sucks. So yeah. I wanted to get out.
It's hard to go back.
It's hard to go back.
One downside of like living a crazy life is like, it's hard to go back to a normal life.
So after that, I enrolled in MCTC and I went there full time. So I did that for the last 2 years of my high school career, I guess. Is what they always call it. and I managed to get an associate's degree out of 2 full years of going to that college.
Whoa.
So I was sort of in this place where I was like, all right, I've graduated from high school, but I have a 2-year college degree. I was pretty fed up with school. I just wasn't feeling like I wanted to take more classes. So I wanted to do something else, and I had a lot of ideas, and the idea of, you know, I have a lot of friends that have done gap year sort of things, and a lot of people go on like some sort of program that's organized for students specifically to take a gap year and have some sort of like international learning experience, so which I think is super awesome.
So there's some structure to it then?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's organizations like Where There Be Dragons, Global Citizen Year, NISLE. Mm. There's all sorts of resources out there. And I looked into a lot of them, and they were all pretty cool, but the idea of being in, like, a structured environment, it didn't really appeal to me. I really wanted to do something where I was completely independent.
Mm. Yeah.
So I didn't make plans for a long time. I had like all these ideas going through my head, and like I did want to do this one program called NISLE for a while that would have had me studying Arabic in Morocco for a whole year for free, which would have been dope, but I didn't get in.
Okay.
So that was like, all right, on to plan B. And my plan B, well, I think my plan B initially was Peru, actually. I was like, all right, I'll go to Peru, I'll learn Spanish, I'll travel around for a year, whatever. And then during the summer, I went to Chinese camp, and I worked there for the first time. And I met this guy, a coworker from Taiwan. And I had all these conversations with him about Taiwan, and it was just this light bulb that went off my head, because I was like, I've never thought about Taiwan. Taiwan is a place I've never really, like, realized was this cool. Because this guy, like, told me all about it, and how there's, like, you know, I actually, I had this, like, crazy dream to become like a surf bum. Like, I had this thing about surfing. Yeah. I really wanted to be somewhere where I could surf.
Yeah, nothing.
And that's
wrong
part
that.
Of the reason why I chose where I was thinking of Peru too.
Sure, great surfing there. Yeah.
But then this guy told me about Taiwan, and then he like mentioned surfing one time, and I was just like, oh man, Chinese plus surfing, like, all right, I'm there. So from that point on, you know, at that point it was July or August already, so I hadn't made plans yet, and I was supposed to be heading off in a month or two. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go to Taiwan. And that's how it started. So I bought a plane ticket to Taiwan. I found a place to do some work exchange through workaway.info, which is this wonderful website full of people from all over the world who just post. They're just called Workaway hosts, and they post opportunities. It's like Woofing, but full of all kinds of work, not just farm work.
Ah, okay.
Huh. It's really, really cool.
Okay. I'll put up the link to that, too.
You should, yeah. It's really an incredible resource. And so I found a place on the southeast coast of Taiwan, and this little cafe on the coast. And so I was like, all right, I'll go work there for a month, and I'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And that's how it all started. And from there, it's just been a series of, you know, I've never had a plan. It's always just been, I want to be on my own, I want to be traveling, and I want to be discovering something.
Yeah.
I want to be finding some sort of purpose or passion or, like, myself, you know. And I think I've gotten to that point to some extent, but I don't know, I guess that's sort of hard to define.
Yeah, I think you'll maybe know, like, in a year.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Or in a couple of years. Like, yeah, that was maybe. It. But, yeah, I think, and, like, what you're doing sounds great without the structure, especially if you are self-motivated.
Yeah, which I think it's been really cool. And I'm lucky to have a lot of support, like from my parents, and really lucky to have had a sort of a lifetime in China, so I have all these connections. I initially planned to spend like most of the year in Taiwan, but after a few weeks in Taiwan, I just like, I felt this like, this draw, literally felt drawn to China.
Huh.
I was like, yeah. It's right across the strait there. It's like my home. I need to go back. And so I felt this just this pull. And so after the month, I was like, all right, screw it. I'm just going to buy a flight to Beijing.
Okay.
So I flew to Beijing. And I went right to my family's house. And when I say my family, I mean the family that I lived with, or not I lived with. There was a family that watched me and my siblings while my parents worked.
Okay.
When we lived in China when I was young.
They were like IEs?
Or? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My sort of IE.
Which means like kind of, well, person who watches.
Right.
Maybe housekeeper might be a, or a nanny. Or,
yeah. Well, yeah. Oh man, it's used in a lot of contexts.
Yeah, they use it pretty broadly.
Yeah, but definitely, okay. Definitely IE. It was this woman who, she sort of had a self-run daycare, and she watched, like, all these Chinese kids, and, coincidentally, a couple American kids.
Yeah.
And throughout the years, we've always kept contact with them, so they're really, like, our family.
Okay.
And so I flew straight to their house, and it was so wonderful to be able to, like, see them again and live with them for a while. And I stayed in Beijing for 6 weeks, and, you know, I was able to get a job through a contact, another family friend that I'd known. And so since then, it's really just been a string of like, okay, I know this person at this place who does this cool thing. I'm going to go there.
Yeah, it's a cool feeling. What did you do in Beijing for work?
I worked at a yoga studio called Fine Yoga. Super cool place. The Laoban, the bosses, are friends of the family that I've known for years. So they welcomed me with open arms, gave me some work. Kind of doing a lot of stuff, helping out with just like daily errands, but also a lot of English help and like translation and stuff.
Oh, are their clientele like mostly Chinese?
Yeah. Almost exclusively. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool experience because yoga is something that's actually now booming in China. It's really, really
becoming, I didn't know that. Okay.
Oh, yeah, it's really becoming super popular. Carol here practices yoga.
I've noticed that, yeah, the owner here.
Mm-hmm. And it was cool to get a sort of glimpse into how that culture is like, I would say expanding, but it's really like creating because it's yoga has never been a thing in China, and now it's come into China.
Sure.
And it's the cultures that coming out of it. The culture that is coming out of it is really interesting because it's like this sort of blend, and it's new. So that was really cool. And Fine Yoga has been there for years, and it was cool to be able to talk with Andy, my friend who helps run the place. And just like get a glimpse into over the years how everything's been changing and how they started off, it was just like super tiny.
Now
in Beijing, it's like there's studios everywhere and like thousands of people are practicing.
See, I'm not even aware of this yet. So,
oh, it's wild. Never would have known if I wouldn't have been there.
Yeah. But then again, it doesn't surprise me at all because so many things are changing just so fast, much, much quicker than anything I can even compare with at home.
Yeah, everywhere. Yeah. But yeah, especially in China.
Yeah, I mean in China, yeah.
So rapidly developing and changing and growing. Yeah.
Oh, it's cool to be a part of it, like kind of in the middle of it. Well, maybe at the tail end.
Yeah.
I kind of wish I had been here like when you were here as a youngster.
Yeah, it's definitely...
Just to see it.
You know, I was young, you know, so my memory isn't 100%, but I definitely get a feeling of... Especially when I first came back to Beijing in October... like walking through the streets and just seeing the streets full of like nice cars,
really nice cars,
like lots Mercedes of really nice cars
and
like Teslas and like all this
Tesla super
cars. Oh yeah, so many Teslas.
Yeah,
and it was just like kind of shocking because like the Beijing of my youth was like full of miaobaoche, you know, like those like bread loaf fans and like little crappy cars little putt-putt things
and if you like, go like 10 years before that, it was probably all bicycles
and carts and horses.
I mean, and so how long did it take like in the United States to go from like people riding bicycles to people driving Teslas?
Oh my gosh.
Oh, I don't know, 150 years?
Yeah.
Right? And in China, it took like 20.
20, yeah. 20 is a pretty good number there.
It's, wow, so fast.
Yeah, it's really crazy.
Anyways, yeah, where did you go from Beijing?
So from Beijing, at the end of my stay in Beijing, I actually had a really good friend fly from Kenya to Beijing to travel with me for a little bit. And we took a train together down to Chengdu to work on a farm for a couple weeks that I also found through Workaway. And Chengdu was pretty cool. The farm was really interesting. The guy who started the project is this really interesting guy who started it as a sort of called CSA style farm, which is community supported agriculture, where you know they create produce and the community sort of buys into it to get the produce on a daily basis.
That's huge in Madison.
It is huge in Madison.
I've got a lot of friends that do it.
Madison. It's funny because my friend who came to visit me and travel with me is from Madison. And she was able to have some cool conversation with him about CSA and about sort of this, you know, this farm style and what he's doing. But initially, that's what it was, but then that didn't work out business-wise for them. So now it's sort of like this educational sort of experience farm. So they have kids, groups of like kindergartners and stuff, and families come every weekend and just, there's all kinds of activities to do. So it's like, you can make cookies, you can play with the pigs, you can do pottery. Cook your own dinner.
It's so cool for like kids to kind of just see where food comes from.
Oh, absolutely.
Or even adults too. You know, just to kind of feel that connection.
Oh, and it's so important. I think, you know, I think a lot about, actually think a lot about food and agriculture and the place that it has had in the past in human society and the place it has now, specifically in Western society. And I think that's something we really lost touch of, is our connection to where food comes from.
Like, we have no idea.
No idea.
I'm including me in that. Like, I don't know how many, like, vegetables I've seen growing. I'm like, oh, that's how they grow. Like if you ever see like watermelons growing, it's like, oh, they're like on this vine thing and kind of like hanging out on the ground, and like, oh, that's interesting.
It's crazy.
Pineapples. Have you ever seen a pineapple growing?
I don't know how a pineapple grows.
They come up exactly the opposite of how you'd think. Like,
Is it in a tree?
No, it's on the ground, and it comes.
Well, I totally imagine pineapple just coming out of trees.
See, this is another thing. We'll have to Google some pictures of like a pineapple farm. Like, when you drive past one, like, you have to be in the tropics to see it. So if you've never traveled to the tropics, but they're all over, like Southeast Asia, I think, has a lot, and obviously like Hawaii and places. But
so it grows like a carrot? Like, it comes out of the ground just like a root vegetable?
It grows up from the ground. I think it's from a vine. But the part that you would think, like, you would think the top, where all the leaves come out of, or whatever you call them, you'd think that's where it's attached, but it's not. It's like on the bottom.
Oh, interesting.
And maybe I totally explained that wrong. I don't know. I'm going to have to look at the picture.
Sounds kind of maybe like a pumpkin, how a pumpkin grows.
Yeah, maybe like that.
The pumpkin has the sort of crawling vine thing, and then it like goes up with leaves, but the pumpkin only grows out of the bottom.
So anyway, it's just really interesting to kind of get that connection that we've lost, that probably most people used to have. Almost everybody had that, like, a century
and
ago.
And many people still have here in China.
In China,
especially,
but it's sad to see them losing it. You know,
even
I was talking about, there's some really cool things about the culture, and when that gets taken away, it kind of sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the West, we're kind of starting to come back to this, to wow, agriculture is actually really important, and knowing your farmer is like a cool thing to have.
Oh man, I hope we're coming back to that.
Well, maybe my perspective is distorted.
Living in Madison is a little bit of a
Madison's a bit of a bubble. I understand that, but it's big there, and you know the farmers markets there are huge.
Oh yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah,
love
it. Okay, so we were talking about Chengdu and your farm work. So how long did you do that?
So that was, I think we were there for a total of 2 weeks.
Okay.
And it was pretty fun. The work itself was pretty just like manual labor kind of stuff, you know, hauling manure, trimming trees. But we also, it was leading up to Christmas while we were there. So we managed to, we sort of had like times during the day where we were supposed to work. So like after breakfast, we worked until lunch. Then after lunch, we got a break, and then we'd work from like 3 until dinner or something.
Okay.
And so after the first week of, like, a bunch of just, like, odd manual labor jobs, we managed to, like, make our work hours into this sort of this, like, art thing. Like, we were like, oh, as our work this morning, we'll decorate the farm for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
So we just, like, spent hours, like, cutting snowflakes and stuff.
Well, that sounds fun.
It was fun. And it was actually really, I think everyone really appreciated it. So it was, like, you know, authentically contributing to the farm. Yeah. But it was just kind of funny that we were like, all right, what artsy thing can we do today so that we don't have to haul poop? but it was fun.
Come up with some good ways to get out of it, huh?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
But the farm was really cool, and when the kids came, it just got, like, super wild, and there were just kids running around everywhere, and, you know.
Yeah, I bet.
It was a good time. We got to play with them. And then on Christmas, they made me wear a Santa suit and, like, MC this little kindergartner show where they sang Christmas songs, and it was pretty funny. And then they like, had me say a little about, like, oh, how was Christmas celebrated in America? And
okay.
It was really interesting. Huh. And it was also sort of weird, though, because... You know, it was Christmas, and so, like, I was missing my family a lot, and, like, oh, man, you know, I wish I was back home with my cousins and grandparents hanging out, and Christmas is, like, the best time of the year for me, too, because my birthday is on December 23rd,
okay.
So it's just this, like, awesome week of, like, birthday, Christmas, family, friends, snow, presents, sledding, skiing, it's just, like, super great.
So you like it.
I like, love it.
Most people I know who have birthdays around Christmas, like, hate it because everyone gives them, like, just one gift.
People always ask me that. Yeah. They're like, oh, man, does it suck? And I'm like, no, it's great. Huh. It's just, like, a wonderful few weeks.
Yeah. And you're a good tax baby, too.
Yeah. I don't even know what that means.
That's important. That's always funny when people laugh at something they don't know. But you admit it. So,
I'm admitting it.
At least in the U.S., you get a big tax deduction for having a kid, for each kid that you have.
Oh, interesting.
And you get it for the whole year that kid has been on this planet. Like, even so, if you're born on December 31st, your parents can deduct you for the whole year, even though you didn't even exist on January 1st.
Oh.
If you're born the next day, then they can only deduct you for that year, and you've been alive the whole year. So it's a big disadvantage if you're born at the beginning of the year.
Interesting. Yeah. So they got a whole extra year out of me.
Yeah. Yeah, they basically got a freebie year for, well, minus a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Taxes, jeez.
Yeah.
There's something I gotta figure out.
Well, yeah, you don't have to think about that for a while. Yeah. Too much, anyway.
Oh, that's funny.
Huh.
But yeah, so it was Christmas time, and, you know, I was kind of missing my family, and it was interesting to be in the midst of this, like, you know, it was like a Christmas celebration, but it was all sort of, like, it wasn't very authentic, you know. It was like a Christmas, like, showcase for somebody who didn't know what Christmas was, so it felt a little off, but it was still a fun time, and, like, the kids were really cool and just, like, really wild and energetic about it, and so it was an interesting thing to be a part of.
Cool. Yeah, it's kind of like there's a really good thing and a really bad thing around Christmas in China, I found, and the really good thing is it's a great time to travel in China because Christmas is just another day here that's not, like, celebrated, so it's not a big deal, and it's a low tourist season, so there's not many crowds. And then if you're a foreigner, like, you probably have off of work. Right. So it's a good, you know, everybody...
Important for us, not for anybody else.
No, not for any of them, any Chinese people. But then if you don't go home, then you miss your family. Yeah. And then you miss out on all the festivities. But going home can be so tough from China. You almost...
For sure.
Like, last year we went home for Christmas, and I was just jet-lagged the whole time.
Oh, really?
I was like... I was just sleeping all day, basically.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Which kind of sucked.
It's a long trip.
Yeah.
It's a long trip.
So what did you do after Chengdu?
So after the farm stint, we went to Kunming. My friend and I went to Kunming. We took another train.
Okay.
The first train to Chengdu, from Beijing to Chengdu, was 22 hours. So that was a long haul.
Yeah.
But the one to Kunming wasn't so bad. It was just, like, maybe 10 or so overnight.
Yeah, that's not bad. You get a bed the whole night, right?
Right.
I assume you got to sleep.
Yeah, we got to sleep.
I've done a few hard seats overnight. And,
oh, really? Oh,
that's rough.
It's not worth it.
Well, there just weren't any sleepers available.
Oh,
it was when I first moved here, and I didn't realize, like, how quickly the tickets sell out.
Yeah, that is a crazy thing.
Yeah.
Train travel.
That's another whole
topic. Why don't we have train travel?
Yeah.
Anyways. So we went to Kunming for a couple days, just a few days. My friend flew to India, like, a few days after we got to Kunming. So we just had a little bit of time there to just kind of see the place. And it was a, you know, Kunming is another place that I've spent a lot of time in the summers.
Okay.
I think probably the bulk of our trips in the summers with the students was actually spent in Kunming because we would do, like, homestays there. And the students would get to stay with families, and they would take classes and stuff. And so it was really cool, and... I was able to show my friend around, like, my just like, you know, my kind of old haunts, like, you know, where we'd hang out, where we'd eat, where we'd play in the park and like the university and stuff. And that was really neat. It was really cool.
It's fun to play tour guides sometimes.
Yeah, I had a really good time. Yeah. Honestly, it made me feel like, oh, I should do this more often. I should bring friends to China.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
If you can convince them.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so Kunming was really fun. It was just a few days, you know, had a good time, went to the market, went to the parks, danced a little, ate some good food. And then my friend flew to India, and I came here.
Okay, came to so Shashi. This is Shashi, this little village, kind of, like, there's two bigger towns that, somewhat near Shashi. Mm-hmm. One is...
Shashi's, like, in the middle.
Yeah, one is Dali and one is Lijiang.
Lijiang is north, Dali is south.
Yeah, and I've been to Lijiang, and that...
That's crazy.
Yeah, coming from, well, I was in Xi'an before that, and coming from, like, the Muslim quarter in Xi'an, I mean, Lijiang seems... just downright quiet, but...
Really? Know. Wow. never been to Xi'an.
Yeah, it's cool. You should definitely go.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, Shashi's an actual small village.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be careful asking people, like, is it a small town? And like, if they're Chinese, like, yeah, it's a small town, only 1 million people. And,
yeah.
But, like, Shashi's actually small. It's just a few hundred people live here.
And it's secluded, and it's beautiful. And
surrounded by mountains.
It's quiet.
Yeah.
Don't find a whole lot of that.
Nah, it's hard to find. Yeah. So this place is great. So are you working here at this hostel?
I'm working here at this hostel that we're in right now.
We're at the Horse Pen Hostel?
The Horse Pen 46.
Horse Pen 46. That's it. Okay.
Super nice place. And it's cool because it's also a hostel that my dad used to bring students to. So,
oh, like, is that right?
I know that's... Shirley. And
okay.
I don't know Carol, but well, I mean, do now, but Shirley's been here for years. And...
Yeah. Shirley is Feifei?
Man, I don't even know her Chinese name.
I'm pretty sure we're talking about the same person.
I think we are.
I know her as Feifei. Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I came here and just right away I was like, yep, this is the place for me. I want to stay really here at least a week.
It's, you know, hostels with character are the best kind of hostels.
Yeah.
Hostels that are really, like, unique and they got a feel about them. And this one definitely does.
Definitely. It's just a really cool place. There's I like all the little quirky signs that are written in English about, like, if you hit your head on this thing, then you're too tall.
Just for you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, and then I hit my head on it.
And then you hear it. And it's, like, perfectly located in Shashi. It's right in the little ancient market square across from a temple museum.
Right, right by the river.
Right by the river.
Beautiful blue skies every day and nice sunsets here.
Yeah.
So, like, did they just have you doing odd jobs around the place?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I'm not getting paid. It's just like I'm here helping out. Because, you know, I don't have a working visa.
Right. Right.
But
you can stay here and eat and stuff.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I'm happy.
Hey, why not?
But yeah, so odd jobs, and I'm supposed to start teaching everybody English every day.
Oh, really?
Tomorrow, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we're going to have little, like, English hours, so that should be fun.
Cool.
Never taught English before, so I think it'll be fun. I'll figure out some quirky ways to...
I mean, I think you have a pretty good command of it.
Yeah, I'm all right, you know.
But the teacher aspect is, not a thing entirely.
I have experience teaching Chinese in, like, a fun way at camp, so I think I just have flip the language thing, and then I'll be able to pull it off.
Okay. So do you think you'll spend the rest of your year just traveling on China?
You know, I actually bought a plane ticket home, and I'm flying home on February 6th.
Okay.
So, you know, it's ended up being just half a year in China, but I'm really at peace with it, I think.
Cool.
It's been what I wanted it to be. It's been a really good time. You know, I've seen amazing places. I've had homecomings. I've met new people.
And
found myself, done a lot of thinking, and I think I'm ready to go home. And I miss my family a lot, and I miss my home. So, I'll go back, and I really, you know, following the pattern of how this whole year has been, I don't know what I'm going to do when I get back. So, I don't know what I'll do this spring, but I think I'll plan some adventures with some friends or family. And
we'll have to keep in touch and find out. Do you have, like, are you on social media? Do you have, like...
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Find me on Facebook. Liam Domain. That's me.
Are you public for anyone to follow you?
I think so, yeah.
Is that how it works?
Yeah. Follow me on Instagram. Also just...
Oh, you got Instagram
too? Liam Domain. Yeah. No spaces.
Can you say it again?
All right. Liam Domain. LIAMDELMAIN. I think that's my Instagram username.
There you go.
Pretty sure.
Okay, and it's the same name on most of your
most of my social media, whatever. Yeah. I'm running a blog now. So.
Oh, what's that called?
It's called Delmain Muses at WordPress.com. So you can actually find a link in my Instagram bio.
Oh, sweet. Okay, and I'll put a link on the show notes too for that.
Oh, great. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, read it up. It's just sort of a recount of my experiences and thoughts.
Great. And you've had, you've lived a really interesting, adventurous life for some of your young age, and I'm sure that'll continue.
Cool. Yeah, I'm excited for it. Look into the future always.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. This has been fun.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information, you can visit my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. From there, you can sign up to get updates from this podcast delivered directly to your inbox. Remember, the Around the World podcast is all about meeting ordinary people who have done extraordinary things. Thanks for listening.